Good morning, Council. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We're ready to move on to the third matter on our oral argument calendar. And please take whatever time you need to settle into Council table. And Marshall, I'll ask you to call the third case.
Calling A240072 in the matter of the welfare of the children of BSFJ parent.
And before we proceed with argument, I'll make just a few quick remarks that were really in the nature of reminders, so you may well be aware of all of them. So first of all, when you go to the podium, take whatever time you need to set your materials around you and make yourself comfortable. The podium is adjustable. It goes up and down. There's a button underneath, and you can also move the microphone around just to make sure that it's capturing your remarks. We do maintain an audio recording of today's oral proceedings, and so we appreciate having that record as clear as possible. It's later posted on the court's website. And then before you start your remarks, if you would identify yourself as well as the client you represent, and take note that on the podium there's a clock. It will tell you how much time is remaining in your argument, 15 minutes for each side, 5 minutes for rebuttal if the appellant chooses. So with that, I think we're ready to hear from counsel for appellant.
May it please the court, my name is Laura Schultz, and I represent appellant Father Brad Ferguson in this matter before the court. This appeal stems from a post-decree motion to modify parenting time provisions following a transfer of legal and physical custody to mother and a request of the district court to order a custody evaluation. The district court denied Father's post-decree motion in both respects, both to modify the parenting time provisions and any request to order a custody evaluation. The order that stemmed from the transfer of legal and physical custody set forth several provisions, some of them some prerequisites for Father Brad Ferguson to have parenting time. And then...
So, counsel, if you don't mind, and I don't mean to interrupt your flow, I want to let you get back to your argument, but you've referred a couple of times to this as a post-decree motion, and I do appreciate that this is post-dissolution. I understand that, and I think the court's well aware. Everyone's briefed the case well, and we've read it, and we're aware of the timeline here. But these are proceedings that occurred in juvenile court as a result of child protection proceedings being initiated. And again, I know it's a complicated issue. It intertwines, but... In terms of the statutes that we ended up looking at and the way this order was entered, it's entered under that section of statutes and under those rules as opposed to the dissolution
statutes. That's correct. And so when I say post-decree, I don't mean that this was in family court or was litigated in family court. It was in juvenile court, which is the proper court, and I think we all agree on that. And the court is to apply the standard of 260C-511 in determining the best interests of the child, and I think that's where the district court erred when it applied what it cited as 518.175. And I think there is an agreement opposing counsel and I's part in that regard.
Right, and I think I appreciate how you're moving through the argument. I think the issue then becomes that we do have, although as we've all clearly stated, we know we're in juvenile court here, there is an intersection between the two courts in terms of modification of those of the orders that are issued with relation to certainly permanency placements, right? And I think you're familiar with that. And it does, in fact, give the court some, under the AH case, clearly gives the court some opportunity to look at 518.18 in reaching a decision on modification.
Correct. And I think the key word is may. It's not a shall. The court may consider the factors in 518.18. However, the court under 260C-511 in the case of AH says the court is to consider all relevant factors to be considered and evaluated. So really it gives the court broad discretion to determine what is in the children's best interest. I think the other thing that...
Right, and in terms of, again, I'm just trying to understand, because we're in a modification scenario, and it seems to me one of the heart of your argument in your brief is that the district court didn't need to look at, in resolving the modification issue, didn't need to look at this order that was issued to transfer permanent legal and physical custody. And I have to tell you, I'm confused by that argument. It seems to me that the district court did need to examine the initial decision for permanent placement with the non-relative.
I think the court needs to look at the order, right? So first look at the order, see if the prerequisites have been met, then see if the other conditions apply. I think the court did err in lumping the children together. Right,
what do you mean by that? I don't understand what you mean by lumping the children together.
So there are three children, and the three children have three different therapists, right? And so the court is to look in Section 5 of the court order. The children's therapists are to make recommendations as to whether visitation is in the children's best interest and should occur. Right, so there were three different letters written by three different therapists. As to child one, child one's therapist said that that child did not want contact, right? That child was clear.
Right, and again, this is all laid out in your briefs, and I appreciate that. But, you know, keeping in mind that the district court, I think we all agreed, needed to look at the initial, you know, a permanent order transferring and permanently placing these children, that order said that no visits, parenting time, or contact shall occur with the children unless it is first recommended by a therapist. And in that regard, all three of the letters that you're referring to, each of them individually, none of them recommends visits, parenting time, or contact.
The second time that they write letters, the first time that they're approached by father, they don't want to write letters or make recommendations. And so I think it's a mix of the therapist not wanting to be involved, make those recommendations, and they say they're not, and they say to Mr. Ferguson, go get a custody evaluation. Then mother's attorney contacts them.
There is a letter in the record that talks about custody evaluations, but when the therapists are asked the specific question to report about each child, as you said, taking each child individually, none of them, you know, the father was unable to offer evidence with regard to this paragraph 5.0 in the permanency.
I think once mother, through her attorney, pressured the therapist
found no evidence of that, counsel. And you don't even say that the district court was clearly erroneous in that regard.
I think they were erroneous because the court didn't even take testimony or hold an evidentiary hearing. It determined it based on a motion hearing that mother hadn't had.
I don't see that issue in your brief. And did I miss it? I mean, did you challenge the fact that no evidentiary hearing took place?
I believe that the district court erred in simply making a best interest determination without exploring this further. I think going back to the lumping the children together, the youngest two children, child two and child three, those therapists said that the child was ambivalent, right? The child couldn't express a preference about visitation. And so I think pursuant to the order that the court should have appointed a custody evaluation at that point to determine what was in the children's best interest, considering all of the factors. What isn't clear in AH is that when talking about 260C-511, is that it's really about what's in the children's best interest, not what's in the parents' best interest, but from the children's perspective. And given the young ages of these children, I think the district court also placed too much influence on what the children wanted or allegedly expressed, given their young ages. And they have been in mother's sole contact for a period of years. As Judge Ladd put it, you know, they were in the midst of an acrimonious divorce, and Ms. Ferguson James was clearly angry at Mr. Ferguson. She makes no pretense of it. In one of the emails that I sent to the district court, she clearly says, like, he should get nothing here. I'm entitled to everything. I'm the one that's wronged here. Clearly, there's this animosity towards father. And essentially, this is a death knell on the children ever having a relationship with their father. They're never going to have a relationship with their father if they're in the sole custody of their mother, and it's whatever at their young age they express, which is really an expression of whatever mom wants.
So, counsel, one of the points that's raised by, I think, both the department and the mother's attorney is that this permanency order that we've all been referring to and then that the father made a motion to modify was the result of a settlement following the beginning of a termination trial. So these are terms, and it is in the order itself. There was quite a meticulous record made, I think, by the district court in that regard, that both parents agreed to the terms of this order, which were to respect the children's wishes for beginning reunification with father. So I didn't see your response to that in your briefing, you know, that this is the result of a mutual amicable settlement. No one likes a settlement fully. That's the nature of a settlement. But it was, and father agreed to these terms.
He did agree to these terms. I was not part of the settlement, but he did agree to these terms. He did have counsel at that proceeding. And I think, looking at the intent of this order, I think the parents intended, or at least what's clear from the terms, is Mr. Ferguson thought that he would have contact with his children. But when you look at the term and the term of we should follow the children's interests, and when the children's interests are being expressed through mother's sole custody of them.
Well, so, counsel, I just need to ask you about this because of the terms of the order that father agreed to, okay? So under paragraph 5.1, it specifically states, and I'm in the addendum at 6, so if visitation or contact is recommended by the therapist, which we haven't even gotten to that in this particular case, we don't have that in the record, but if it is, the parents will honor the children's wishes for whether or not visitation and or contact should occur. So I guess I'm confused by the argument that father's making here because it seems as though he agreed to exactly the terms and the reasons that the district court is now, you know, denying this motion. So
he did agree to those terms, and that's where the court has the power to modify those terms because of the length of time that went by on father not seeing these children or having any contact, the fact that they're in their sole custody of their mother, who is clearly angry at father and does not want father to have any contact with them, that is being used to essentially cut off all contact. He will never have a relationship with these children. It is, in effect, a termination of parental rights instead of a transfer of legal and physical custody with some possibility of contact, or contact under terms as contemplated here with visitation that would ensure their safety but allow contact and promote that relationship. I would just respectfully request that the court reverse the district court's denial of appellant's post-decree motion and remand for further proceedings. Okay.
Thank you, counsel. And I forgot to ask our counsel dividing argument time.
Your Honor, I will be taking the argument.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jennifer Moore, and I represent the respondent mother, the mother of the three children whose best interests are implicated by this case. At counsel table is Britta Nicholson, who represents Hennepin County but will not be participating at oral argument today. I can tell that the court has really read the briefs, and so I don't want to, please interrupt me if you have any questions, because quite frankly, I think that is the better use of our time today. But I will start, just interrupt me whenever. The lodestar principle in all custody and visitation cases is the best interests of the children. In family court, judges are asked to make detailed findings of fact supporting the best interests of the children as set forth in Minnesota Statute 518.17. The juvenile court does not necessarily have the same guidance in reaching an initial determination. We agree with that, that the juvenile court doesn't have to use, can go off 260C and use all relevant factors. But 260C.511 provides only that the best interests of the children mean all relevant factors to be considered and evaluated. However, in this case, it is clear that the juvenile court applied the correct best interest standard. How do we know this? Well, first, MnStat 260C.521.2A provides that juvenile court orders may be modified using the standards under 518.18. 518.18 is the modification statute, and provides that a court may modify an order if there has been a substantial change in circumstances and the children's best interests would be served by modification. Thus, the family court statute that the juvenile court uses to establish a basis of modification tells the juvenile court to look at the best interest standard, best interest factors in Min Stat 51817. Now, that isn't, you know, that I suppose that the court could frame it differently than 51817 and say all relevant factors and maybe go off a little bit differently. But generally speaking, I think that the best interest factors in 51817 are a pretty exhaustive list and incorporate virtually everything that the juvenile statute would contemplate.
So, counsel, when I read AH, it seems to suggest to me that at least at that point in time when our court was looking at it, is a similar case in many respects. It's
yeah.
certainly got many differences as well, but there is the comment made by this court that the best interest factors, and again, they are looking at a modification request in that case by a mother, and again, recognizing that 518.18 plays a role, but they refer back to 260C.511 for the,
The holding of that case is actually that the court can't use 518.175 to modify it.
That's the precise holding. And we all recognize here, I don't think anybody's hiding that this district court did cite a statute 518.175 that's been rejected in AH. So that's all well recognized. So I think what we're trying to understand is, did the district court's analysis track the correct legal standard?
Well, there is another reason why the correct legal standard was applied, and that is because that is the correct legal standard that was agreed to by the parties in the permanency order. So therefore, we're not just talking about, the statutory framework, if the court were to take a look at AH and extend that holding, which I think it would be an extension, that would be, you could then go and say, but the parties can agree to a different standard. And in this case, they agreed to the family court's best interest standard.
And you rely on what in the original order for that?
Let me pull that up.
And I apologize, perhaps you made that point in your brief.
I did make that point in my brief. The order actually...
I think maybe paragraph 8.0 on page 7?
That's what exactly what I was going to say.
Okay.
So it's...
I mean, it's not a rejection of 260C. Maybe I'm reading it differently from the way you are, but paragraph 8 specifically mentions 260C.521 subdivision 2. And the standards of 518.18. So I'm not quite sure that the original permanency order really embraces one standard over the other. Am I missing something?
I think it does embrace 518.18 in the family court standard. But more than that, we have on the record a statement by the father that this order is in the best interests of the children. So the permanency order says, hey, look, I agree that it's in the best interest of my children that we should kick the ball down the road and see if we can and see if things will change a little bit and the children will be open to visitation or their therapist would recommend such visitation in the future. So, faced with the statutory framework and the framework of the settlement, the court was reviewing the affidavits and determined that what the best interests of the children would be, because that's 518.185, and that is also. The statutory, the obligation, which is that there should not be an evidentiary hearing. It's the case is decided on the affidavits. So if we take a look at appellant's compliance, I think we all agree that the appellant here did comply with his portion of the requirements. My client might possibly have a different opinion if I was being candid, but for purposes of this appeal, we agree that the appellant fully complied with his portion of it. What we disagree about is what it took, whether or not the therapist's note of July 21st, 2021 constituted a statement that that the therapists were unwilling to make a recommendation as to custody or parenting time. And it's important to place that note in context. One, it's the note of one therapist, and it is sandwiched between documents that beforehand, which state that the children don't want contact, and afterwards, where the therapist wrote letters saying that we do not recommend contact at this time. Now, there are three children.
There's one explicit. Isn't there one letter that explicitly states, I believe for child one, that the therapist does not recommend a contact?
Right.
Right. I think appellant's counsel is accurate in saying that the other two don't come out and make that explicit recommendation.
But that isn't exactly what the therapists have to recommend is that visitation occur.
And I have understand, not counsel. I'm just, and then, I would just right. like to, if we could accurately describe the record, it helps this.
And the wait. Children have to have express a wish to have contact. So those are the two obligations here. And so I don't think we disagree on the facts, really. Mm-hmm. The third child, it wasn't that she was ambivalent, it's that she wouldn't even talk about the subject. She's young. I don't know what the basis of that decision not to talk about, I think it's stretching it a little bit to say she was ambivalent. There was an argument that my client had expressed some animosity towards the respondent that may have created an inference that there was some unhealthy alignment between the therapist and the mother. But there's no evidence of that. The one piece of evidence is an email that the mother wrote to her attorney in the context of a financial negotiation that said, I want to get it straight. That said that she wanted everything that's due because she didn't, and that she didn't feel like she felt like she was the wronged party. That is, that statement was made out of context of the relationship, of the custody dispute, and it was made to her attorney. So, I mean, if candidly, I've been a family law attorney for decades, if my candid conversations with my clients became part of the record all the time, the court might possibly think that all of my clients had had anger issues. So I don't think that is evidence that the mother was engaging in evidence of unhealthy alignment. Here's the quote: "All I want is what is owed me." Appellant also makes an argument that the reversal of the maltreatment finding is perhaps a change in circumstances that the court should have considered. I want to point out that at the time he entered into the permanency order settlement, he knew that he'd appealed that maltreatment finding. He knew that it hadn't been resolved yet. He nevertheless decided that it was in his children's best interest to forego a trial on those issues.
Well, counsel, I believe the original order, and correct me if I'm wrong, the permanency order, really the findings seem to be limited to the parents' agreement and the department's agreement that this is how the transfer will proceed.
Right.
As opposed to focusing on the underlying reasons for why this is a child protection, or was a child, or still is a child protection matter.
Yeah. Right, and I mean, one of the things I have attempted
I'm just trying to say very indirectly and maybe too indirectly that the maltreatment determination is not part of the factual findings underlying the original transfer. And I think the district court made that point as well in resolving the modification order. Is that your understanding too?
It is, and yeah. It's one of the reasons I didn't go into any great detail in my brief about what those allegations were. I said what the allegations were, but I didn't state any position as to whether those were true or not. Because quite frankly, my client believes that they were true, but she wasn't a part of the administrative appeal anyway, so.
Yeah, I think father's other argument is that for a change in circumstances is that he has complied with all of the preconditions that the district court gave him in the initial permanency order, and that is a change in circumstances, and that he's completed each of the steps that were required and has come away with no recommendation for ongoing therapeutic treatment, apart from, of course, reunification eventually.
But what he didn't, but in the permanency order, he agreed as to what that change of circumstances might possibly look like. And it wasn't just that he complied with the order, it's that the kids wanted contact and that the therapist recommended contact. And so, I mean, children are entitled to have some sort of, stability, sense of stability, and that things that are settled in one day aren't going to change a couple years later when they're settled. And these children are entitled to work this issue out on their own time. I want to just briefly touch one more point on the alienation issue, which is, I think it's more of an alignment issue, but, I'm not the only person standing here today. Hennepin County is also involved. Hennepin County is standing up here today for the best interests of these children. And so it's not just me saying that the children's best interests are served by the court's denial of parenting time at this time. It's Hennepin County and their interests as well. With that, I simply ask that the court affirm the juvenile court's order denying appellant's motion to establish custody and parenting time and for custody evaluation.
Thank you, counsel. You've got 5 minutes for rebuttal if you'd like.
May it please the court, very briefly, I just wanted to touch base on a couple things. First, with regard to the change in circumstances, as the court pointed out, not only did father go through the psychosexual and no recommendations come out of that other than to reunify with the children. But the other change of circumstance is that this order transferring legal and physical custody was done in 2021. Father has not had any contact whatsoever, and we could go into all the reasons for that, but had to do with a lot of further litigation. He hasn't had any contact with them in 3 years. So I don't think it's surprising that these children would be ambivalent about expressing an interest in seeing their father when so much time has passed. The second thing I wanted to point out is that the parties did contemplate that the therapist making recommendations and the reason for the custody evaluation is that it was to avoid a potential bias or conflict between the therapist and the children. And I think that is clear and inherent here that I can't imagine any situation where there isn't an extreme potential for bias or conflicts when the children haven't had any contact with father. The therapists initially don't make any recommendations or say, go get a custody evaluation. We don't want to. But then when they're pressured by mother, then they come out and say, okay, no contact. So to me, I think that does scream for potential for bias or conflict. The last thing I would point out is that in AH, that mother that made her motion.
So counsel, in the record, what do you rely on to support your argument. The letters from the therapists that were submitted to the court are directly addressed to the district court, at least the ones that I'm looking at. Maybe I'm missing something in the record. So what do you rely on to say that mother pressured the therapist? Because the district court rejected that argument below.
Because the therapists initially say, we're not going to do that. Go get a custody evaluation.
Again, you overstate the record, counsel. There's one letter from one therapist that mentions a custody evaluation.
And right. She is the supervising therapist to the other two therapists.
Right, but as you pointed out, each child has their own therapist, right? Correct. And those therapists submitted letters directly to the court. I don't understand where you're reaching this, you know, factual assertion about pressure by mother, which, again, the district court already rejected, and you know, you're coming up to an appellate court and asking us to look at the facts differently, so you need something in the record to do that.
The therapist in their communication, in the first communication, won't even really talk to father. All of their contact has been through mother and not with father. So I think they're only being presented, right, mother's view, not father's view.
And you rely on what in the record for that, counsel?
The letter that the therapist, well, I think it was
because again, the letters in the record,
not the
in
letter.
Your addendum that was submitted to the court are directed to the district court. So I guess it seems to me that you're making very dramatic factual assertions, already rejected by the district court below, and asking this appellate court to take your point of view without anything in the record to support your claim.
The email from the first therapist that where she says you should go get a custody evaluation, she's refusing to talk to father, right? Other than to say, I can.
No, I'm looking at the letter right now. It's 88 in your addendum, right? From one of the therapists. Yep. Correct. It doesn't say anything about mother pressuring the therapist. The mother pressuring the therapist says nothing about that.
Well, the therapist isn't going to say mother pressured me to write this. I mean,
right, but that is your assertion today in court, counsel. You need some support for it in the record. You can't simply make these statements. And the time to make your record on that is in district court. It's not here on appeal.
The last thing that I wanted to say with regard to in the welfare of AH, the mother in that case made a... Well, the court restricted or changed the parenting time that she had. The court found that there was stress and adversity in the visits. There was lack of consistency for the child, right? The court found there were really some 3 years of supervisor's visitation notes that were showing that there was, right, this extreme harm to the children. In this case, we don't even have any parenting time or anything to determine the children's best interests. It's just simply a recommendation from the therapist, the kids don't want it, or at least one of the therapists saying in a letter that the kids don't want it. There's no actual visitation to show that the children are somehow being harmed by father. I see that my time is up at this time, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to all the lawyers in this case. We very much appreciate hearing from you. We appreciate the written submissions. They help the court in reaching its decision. This matter is now submitted to the court for a decision. We will issue a written decision within the statutory timeline. Thank you. That concludes the three matters on the court's oral argument calendar. We are now in recess for our non-oral calendar.
Please rise.